Welcome to the latest Toby Haydock's Who's Round, which is a monster of an interview. Well, this is a hastily convened one because we're at the Doctor Who Festival and I'm backstage with somebody who's, we'll talk about it in the interview, but has made more than one contribution to Doctor Who in its current form. So I'm going to ask him to introduce himself and tell me why I'm talking to him about Doctor Who.
Hi there, my name is John Davey and I have played many of the monsters over the last 10 years in Doctor Who.
So what I loved yesterday was that you were described on stage as the sort of John Scott Martin of the modern era of Doctor Who. And I thought that was a lovely synthesis of old and new, and the fact that you knew what that meant. And that a guy that's been dead for a few years is remembered in front of thousands of people. So is it quite an honour to be the John Scott Martin of modern Doctor Who then?
It is. It is a kind of real honour. And weirdly enough, obviously, there's a name similarity. Mm. And then there's another John Levine, who kind of went down the same sort of route as well. So maybe being called John and being a monster goes hand in hand.
Oh, of course. Well, yeah, John Levine, their boots to fill, because, of course, he started off as a monster and then became a regular, and although you've probably done as many episodes as him. So.
Well, not that I'm counting, but I have been in, to date, 35 episodes.
Wow.
I believe that's more than Colin Baker, isn't it? I'm not sure.
Yeah, pretty much, yes. And full length, and because they're longer. Although Colin had mixed lengths, but yeah, yeah. That's a good stint. So okay, take us back to the beginning then. How did you become involved with Doctor Who?
It was kind of by accident. It's quite a familiar story with a lot of people, really. But at the time, I was working for a company, a film production company, and we were shooting music promos or music videos, as people call them. That's basically my job that I actually still do now as a photographer and a cameraman. And the company that I worked for in Bristol, they were called Collision Films, and they basically specialised in stop-motion animation. So lots of the music videos that we shot were all to do with stop-motion animation. And there's a technique that was kind of pioneered by another Bristol company that I have done work for before. They were called Bolex Brothers, called pixelation, and basically that's stop motion animation but using real human beings. So basically you're animating not a model but a physical human being, and it's probably one of the most difficult things for any actor to actually achieve, because there's huge amounts of time where you're standing still in one position and literally they're moving you piece by piece. So my experience is kind of really from stop motion animation, understanding how the body works and moves, and there was basically big periods of time where I wasn't actually working, so I just sort of signed up just to do general kind of background work on TV, and then we got a call up for an audition. There was about 50 guys. We all went over to the BBC over in Cardiff. We spent a day with Elsa Burke, who's the choreographer on Doctor Who, and the entire day was spent with us marching up and down, walking around with our eyes shut and general musical theatre stuff. And at the end of the day, we were told, basically, this is an audition to become the Cybermen. And by the way, you're not allowed to tell anyone. So it was a bit of a bitter pill. It would have been probably better if they didn't actually tell us that in the first place. So, you know, once I heard that, I was like, oh my God, this is absolutely fantastic, you know, being a young fan of Doctor Who as well. We then went for a second audition and then went to Millennium Effects to try the costumes on. The original Cybermen from Series 2, it was a one-size-fits-all or fits-none kind of costume. So they kind of had to leave it kind of generic and slightly adaptable. Went up to Millennium Effects, tried the costume on, it fit, put the helmet on, they said, are you okay, do you feel comfortable with it? And that was basically the start of my career as being a monster in Doctor Who.
So have you got any sort of background in movement and stuff? Have you had any...
Not any formal training, any kind of drama stuff at school, but I'm kind of one of these people, and there are actually a lot of people involved, you know, Nick Briggs and Barnaby Edwards as well, you know, obviously Barnaby being a Dalek operator and Nick being the voice of the Daleks. You know, you look at their resume and there's a whole list of stuff, you know, it's kind of all part and part. If you want to be a performer or in this industry, actually having a vast knowledge of various different things is very helpful. So it was kind of self-taught, and I think a lot of it was down to Elsa and her training with us. I feel as though I'm a blank canvas, really. I know a lot of monster actors were dancers and performers, which helps hugely, but I was kind of hoping that I was a blank canvas and Elsa moulded me into learning all of these movements.
Well, you must be, because not all of the Cybermen have come back time and time again playing lots of different parts, which you have. They must like having you around.
Yeah, well, you know, I absolutely love being on the show, and it can be pretty hard work being in a monster costume all day, but at the end of the day, I'm sat here and I'm thinking, you know what, I'm a monster in Doctor Who, I'm a Cyberman, I'm a Dalek, you know, what is there not to like?
Yeah, and of course, I suppose you've got that thing of you're involved as a key part of a massive show, and yet your face is generally hidden behind different things.
Well, that's the advantage, you know. I keep on coming back, I keep on getting work. There's a couple of times when you get to see my face. I think there was the Sultaran Stratagem episode. I was an Atmos worker in a corridor, and I had the world's greatest line. There's a door that opens, and I say, "It's open." And then a couple of times I've been a unit soldier, and then more recently, in fact, last Saturday on the Zygon Inversion, I had a nice little scene where I was sat in a police car staring at Peter, you know, both doing a bit of eyebrow acting. But yeah, in general, you know, put me in a monster costume and I'm more than happy to terrify people.
And I mean, as you've alluded to the fact that, you know, you get encased in these things, to somebody that's not done that, but I have done little bits of mask work, but only mask, a solo mask, a whole suit. It's not for the claustrophobic, then, I take it.
No, not at all. And again, it was down to the training and the breathing exercises that Elsa did with us. It's a very natural thing, and a lot of people that do scuba diving do the same thing. If you haven't had a lot of experience, you just start hyperventilating. It's a natural thing your body will do, because you know that there's going to be a restriction of oxygen, so you do the opposite of what you should do. You actually start breathing in more oxygen. So it's basically just breathing slowly, relaxing thoughts, a bit of meditation.
Oh, a bit zen. We're all Cybermen a bit zen, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right.
What about, because when I read or participated in interviews with the actors from old Doctor Who, they quite often say, well, when you're in a monster suit, it gets after a while, people actually forget that there's somebody inside, and you hear all sorts of gossip, and you sometimes find that you have to remind people that, hey, there's a human being in here.
Yeah, exactly. I think the one costume, more than anything else, is being sat in a Dalek, because if you're not actually moving, potentially people can't actually make the link that there is physically someone inside of there. So like you said, in fact, I've been sat in a Dalek, and people will be having conversations, and I'm just listening to their conversation, obviously them not knowing that I'm inside. And then the other thing is, you know, people forgetting that you're actually in there. So if there is a huge group of you, like, for example, in Asylum of the Daleks, and also The Magician's Apprentice, where there's sort of 20-odd people in Daleks, you basically just got to keep the Dalek moving, the eye stalk moving, just so that people know that you're actually in there. So when they go off to lunch, they leave you stuck.
So which, because obviously there are all sorts of different Daleks now, which ones have you been in, or is there a difference between them?
Yeah, well, The first Dalek outing that I had was Victory of the Daleks. Up to then, Barnaby Edwards and Nick Pegg were the Dalek operators. I think Dan Barrett and a couple of other people also came in. But in Victory of the Daleks, there were five of the new Dalek Paradigm Daleks. And in the scene, there was also the classic new series Dalek and a couple of Ironsides. So potentially there was eight Daleks all going at once. And I met Barnaby... I briefly met Barnaby when we did Doomsday, where there was a big battle between the Cybermen and Daleks. Then I think the next time was probably... no, it would have been before the proms. There was a BAFTA thing at the Barbican Centre.
Yeah.
And that's basically when I met Barnaby and sort of got a chat and kind of become friends, really. So I think basically they were saying, right, we need five other guys to be in the Daleks. I think Barnaby and Nick made recommendations. So the guys, it was pretty much the guys that did the Cybermen, then came back and did the Daleks. We spent a day rehearsing, learning the tricks of the trades on how to manoeuvre the Daleks and how the Daleks actually should hold themselves, which in fact is probably one of the most difficult things to do, because all the other costumes are humanoid, so you can actually portray your emotions quite easily. But obviously a Dalek is just an inanimate object, so it was just all the little nuances, just bringing to life these little foibles of the Daleks. So, yeah, that was my first time as a Dalek. So I was the orange Dalek, the Dalek scientist. And I believe, actually, Mark Gatiss was actually on set at the time, and he did say that the orange was his favourite. So I don't know whether he's being kind, but that meant quite a lot to me, really.
Obviously, like your Dalek shuffle.
Yeah. And then on from there, we then did the Asylum of the Daleks, where there was a whole bunch of us. And then... Day of the Doctor and Time of the Doctor, and then more recently the Magician's Apprentice and the Witch's Familiar.
So which ones were you in?
Right, it was, we kind of jumped around a bit, but I was in a classic bronze Dalek. I was also in, which I was really excited about, was the original Dead Planet style Dalek.
Wow, yeah.
Which was fantastic, except for they're very small on the inside.
Because they're tiny.
Yeah, and physically my neck was over to one side. But that's all part and parcel.
Because, of course, in the old series, you could tell the Cybermen actors and the Dalek actors, because the Dalek actors were below about 5'8", and the Cybermen actors were above 6'1". So it seems odd to me that you've got somebody who does both.
Yeah, well, the new series Daleks were obviously that little bit bigger than the previous Daleks. So, obviously, you know, Nick Pegg's a tall guy. He's at least 6'2". But we all seemed to be able to fit in there quite nicely, and it was it was a fantastic design and fantastic build.
And today at the Doctor Who festival, where we're having a lot of fun, you're giving your Maya a live on stage, so that's quite a bit. And I touched the costume; they look really bulky on the telly, and it's actually quite light. Relatively lightweight.
Yeah, it's made from a material called plastazote, which is a dense foam that they use for packaging or flight cases. It is a great material, and cosplayers have been using this to create suits and costumes for years. Basically, it's malleable, sculptable, gluable, paintable. So the guys at Millennium have, you know, used that material. The paint finish on it's fantastic. It does look like rusty metal. It was fantastic for us because it's obviously fairly light, and it makes our lives a lot easier. In comparison, the Cybermen in Series 2 were made out of fiberglass, and they probably weighed about 4 stone, the entire suit. Which, in fact, actually did help the movement, because because they were so heavy, when we were walking, it gave that impression that we were heavy. So now, obviously, with the Maya costume, because it's so light, if you walk around in it, it will just start bobbling around because there isn't any extra weight. Right. So we spent a day again with Elsa, and she was basically just sort of teaching us techniques on how to make a light costume appear heavy.
That's interesting.
But it's a fantastic costume, and we had a great audience reaction today.
Yes, it's been marvellous. And so you say, you know, you're a fan of the old series. I mean, were you a fan, or just somebody who enjoyed watching it? What's the level of your geekery?
It didn't take over my life, so I probably wasn't a fan, but it's probably my first experiences of science fiction, really. I basically remembered John Pertwee is probably a little bit before my time, but Tom Baker was my first experience of Doctor Who, which, you know, you see this guy, this big, confident guy, kind of coming onto your screen and getting into all these adventures, and it's pretty captivating for a young kid.
Yeah.
And then obviously seeing the monsters and being scared, hiding behind the sofa and all of that stuff, it was just, you know, one thing that really scared me was Talons and the rats.
Yeah.
Now, I know everybody said, like, oh, it's a man in a suit, but it's that whole thing that I was a young boy and I just didn't see that. That just didn't register me seeing a man in a suit. And I can remember for days sort of playing on my front wall, imagining my front wall was a giant rat and I was riding it. So it's... Yeah, it's a great memory. The Hand of Fear was another one as well. That's
a terrific effect.
Yeah,
that really
that stopped me from sleeping at night. So.
Oh, yeah, so you're more than a passing acquaintance with the show. So what about working with the Doctors then? Because you've worked with three Doctors.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's what I get to see is Doctor Who the stage show or Doctor Who the play.
Yeah,
which is fantastic because I'm there in my costume and I'm, you know, within 5-10 feet away from David Tennant or Matt Smith or Peter Capaldi, watching them act, and it's just electrifying being that close to these guys and watching them do their craft.
And it must be fairly full on because acting big dialogue heavy scenes all day is quite full on. But I imagine doing that in a show that has smoke effects and lighting and big heavy costumes and monsters. You must all be knackered by the end of the day, I would think.
Yeah, well, there's a fine line between being physically fit and being knackered. So, so again, with the Cybermen, we, you know, our body weight increased by 4 stone for the day. Mm. We kept fit, basically.
It's a good workout.
Yeah. There's always a fine line because you can't eat too much because otherwise your costume will make you feel a bit ill. You can't drink too much water because obviously you're going to want to go to the toilet all the time and you can't. So it's basically just getting levels of comfort to stay in the costumes.
And what do you hope for in a director? Because it must be quite odd for directors having to come in and work with unusual things like monsters. And what does a director do that helps you the most, do you think, that you've experienced on Doctor Who?
Well, I think every director obviously has a different process of how they work. But it is really nice when a director will actually give us as the monsters direction directly. Obviously, there's a hierarchy on a film set and a TV set where you have the first assistant and then the third assistant and they relay information. But whenever a director will actually kind of relay the information direct to us, that is it's absolutely fantastic. So Hetty, who did the Magician's Apprentice, which is familiar, literally she was just totally hands-on with all of the Daleks. It was absolutely fantastic. She was like saying, right, you're going to do this, you're going to move there, and what will happen is, you know, so she has a vision exactly. So it's that's brilliant when they can actually portray their vision directly to us. Saul Metstein was another one as well. He's fantastic. But my background, obviously, shooting music promos, shooting stop motion animation, visual effects, and all of that background, obviously helped me look at the bigger picture when we're on set. So I know, oh, okay, that's a green screen shot, and they're going to have to compass out, and all of this stuff. It helps.
It's in the blood already. It's in your process already. So have we missed any monsters out? Daleks, Cybermen, the Maya,
Ood.
The Ood, of course.
Yeah. The Ood is fantastic. That's probably one of the most comfortable costumes. It's just a big pull-on foam latex mask. Sometimes I'd probably say too comfortable. So if you're sat down in a dark room for a long period of time, it's like being inside a giant pillow. So you have to really watch yourself from falling asleep. And a really fun one that we did was the Whisper Men. In the name of the Doctor episode.
Yeah.
That was a full prosthetic, glued to our face, 3 hours at 4 o'clock in the morning. So that was pretty fun, and it was quite interesting at the canteen at lunchtime, because we share the canteen with the Casualty, which is also filmed in Cardiff, that there was a few of the ladies that were nurses, and they just really didn't like us being in there, and they actually had to leave the canteen. So that was actually testament to the design of the Whisper Men, that you can actually scare people in real life as well.
And do you, because if you're playing a monster that doesn't have, like, do you get to see the whole of the script? Because there's obviously a lot of secrecy around Doctor Who as well.
Yeah, we only really get to see the scenes that we're in. So so it's quite interesting when you actually see the programme, because we only know our certain part. And sometimes you think, why are we here, and how did we get there, and why are we doing that? So so all is kind of revealed when you watch it on screen.
And I, of course, you know, so when you watch it, you can always pick out which one's you then, I guess.
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially with the Cybermen, because the Cybermen all look the same suit, but there was just very, very slight differences with people, and you could just about work out who's who. The same with the Whispermen. There was four of us as Whispermen. We all had the same prosthetic on our face, but the prosthetic kind of exaggerated your own features. So again, I could actually pick out exactly who was me in each shot.
And do you have a favourite monster that you've played?
I think my favourite thing that I did was from the Pandorica Opens episode, where there was a headless Cyberman. They shot the Cyberman sequence where the Cyberman was fighting with Amy with an actor with only one arm, because the Cyberman had the arm missing. But they didn't get the reveal of the Cyberman walking in and picking up the head. I believe the video is actually on Doctor Who Extra, Doctor Who Confidential. So I basically had a green bag over my head and a green sock over my arm. Was it Toby Whitehouse directed that?
Toby Haynes.
Toby Haynes, that was it. And basically explained what's happening. The Cyberman will walk around the corner and then pick the head up. So that was quite an odd thing at the time, but when you actually watch it on screen, it looks absolutely fantastic. They put in CG wires. A lot of people have asked, like, oh, did they build up the suit over your head? And I was like, no, literally, it was a very, very good visual effects piece of trickery. And there was one little thing that I suggested to Toby as well, which is in there. And it's just a nice little touch that I said that, well, you know, in the real world, if I've got an arm missing, I would be slightly off balance. And in theory, I should actually be just leaning over to one side. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's great, put it in. So when you actually watch it, you'll actually see the Cyberman is physically moving over, slightly leaning to one side, because in the real world, that's what would actually happen. Uh-huh. So it's adding these little nuances, which is a really fun and cool part of the whole process.
And are there any monsters that you haven't played that you sort of go, oh, I'd like to have a crack at one of those?
Well, the monsters I haven't played are basically the very tall and the very short, which obviously I can. I can't be a Silence, I can't be a Sultaran. There's one monster that, again, it was a very vivid memory as a child, was the Sea Devils. And the scene, like, appearing out of the water, which really just stuck in my memory. So you know, doing that would be fantastic. I'm not too sure how health and safety will actually deal with it. But I believe, actually, they did a reverse shot for appearing out of the water, I think.
Well, they had real problems because they kept, every time they ducked under, they filled full of air.
Yeah.
So they kept popping up.
Yeah.
So, and I think what it wasn't so much reverse, was what they did was, instead of completely submerging, they had to sort of kneel down and do it in stages.
Right, okay.
But I don't know why you'd covet being in the sea. It looks terrible. Obviously you watch yourself, and what do your friends and family make of the fact that you're in Doctor Who all the time?
Well, you know, loads of people I know said, like, oh, it's absolutely cool, it's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I'd love to do what you do. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's great, but at the same time, it's not regular. So it's, you know, it's a fantastic addition to everything else that I do in life. And, you know, every day that I have to get up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and go to work, I relish it. And savour every moment. So,
So tell us about the other stuff. What is it? So when you're not terrorising the universe, is it still the photography and the...
Yeah, I still do photography. I still do camera operating, filming work. I've also I've just been body doubling, actually, on a show that's on Fox called The Bastard Executioner. Which was written by Kurt Sutter, that wrote Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a, obviously from the title, it's no holds barred, blood and guts.
It's not a light comedy.
No, exactly. But because he's writing in it and exec producing it, and he's in it, he's a fairly busy man. So it was a fantastic opportunity that I basically got to be his double. He's wearing a full prosthetic. Basically, he's got like a burnt effect to him. Most of the scenes, he's actually got a hood up, so you can't actually see his face from the reverse shot. So, so I spent a couple of months basically doing the shots that either he's not there or doing the reverse shots. So that was great. I got to actually be on screen with his real life wife as well, Katie Sagal.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, quite an honour, really. Cause
yeah, she's great in Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, yeah.
She's an actress.
Fantastic. But, I remember from, like, Married with Children,
course,
and
yeah,
obviously Futurama as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, so it's kind of, obviously, yeah, it's like my kind of fandom kind of kicked in a little bit and think, oh, this is really exciting. But it's just great. I like lots of variation in life and different things going on, and the whole kind of Doctor Who monster thing is sort of slotted in quite nicely with a lot of them.
And of course, everyone's dream, I think, was to be involved in the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who. And you were in the episode.
I was in the episode quite a few times, interestingly enough. I was in one of the Daleks in the Time War sequence at the beginning. That was great fun. We spent a couple of days near Pontypool in an abandoned warehouse complex, which I think they've used time and time again for Sortaran Stratagem and also Voyager the Damned and everything. You know, disused abandoned warehouse in Wales is, you know, a pre-made set. Yeah, we had great fun in the Daleks, trundling along with Danny Hargreaves's huge fireball explosions. So that was fantastic. Then the scene where Doctor and Clara walk into the gallery with the big sort of David Tennant painting. I'm actually a unit soldier in the doorway and also stood next to the painting. So you see me in the same shot within a couple of seconds, albeit you wouldn't know it's actually me unless you were looking for it. Then what we did was the shot in the undergallery with the Zygons under the shrouds. There were 6 shrouds over 6 of the statues, which were then the Zygons. But there were only 2 Zygons, Aidan Cook and Paul Casey. So they wanted to give the appearance that all of these shrouds were Zygons. So there was me and a couple of the other guys who were playing the unit soldiers, and they were like, "Well, I'll tell you what, pop under the shrouds, and then when we give you the cue, you start moving." Obviously, we won't pull the shrouds off, but, you know, it'll give the impression that there are more than two Zygons. So if you actually look at the opening shot, looking down the undergallery to the doorway where the Doctor comes through, on the right-hand side, you will see a shrouded, what you think is Zygon. But if you actually just look at the head, it suspiciously looks exactly the same shape as a unit soldier's helmet, because it is me underneath it in my unit soldier costume. And what was a double bonus is when Peter Davison's The Five-ish Doctors came out, they actually used exactly the same gag. So, so that was actually a really nice little touch.
I only have the two further questions. Thanks so much, because listeners, just to let you know, he's been very busy today and he's got another panel to do. He's done a panel and has very kindly given a little bit of his time off to this podcast. So we ask you to dig deep and give to John's charity, which is...
It's St. Peter's Hospice. A few friends of mine have unfortunately passed away, and St. Peter's Hospice have been very good to them and their families. So that's my charity of choice.
So please do that. Thank you. And the final question, which I've made a rub for my own back, but I ask everybody, is what is your message to the Doctor Who fans out there listening to this podcast?
Keep watching, keep being scared, keep being thrilled by it. It's fantastic. I can't wait for Christmas and the Christmas episode. I can't tell anything about it, but I'm in the Christmas episode, and what I've seen of it is brilliant. It's bonkers. It's totally Doctor Who. So I'm looking forward to Christmas.
Oh, fantastic. Well, John Davey, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant. That was great. Thank you. That was great. That was great, because I haven't done much from the new series. And I often think I've rather neglected it. So, it's nice to have. Thanks to John. Obviously, the Christmas special to which he refers in that interview is last year's Christmas special, not this year's Christmas special, which he's probably in as well, because he's in everything. But, you know, yes, so timey-wimey. His charity is St. Peter's Hospice, which is Bristol's only adult hospice, caring for patients and families and Bristol. And it's at St. Peter's Hospice, STPETERS Hospice, stpetershospice.org.uk. Please donate if you can. It sort of helps to make this very silly thing that I'm doing worthwhile. I'm on Twitter at Toby Haydock. Do follow me there if you want more lame jokes and dead actors, I suppose. Until next time, thank you very much for listening.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, The Star Men.
Welcome to Gallius Ultima, the launch platform for the greatest feat in the history of space exploration.
It's beautiful. That's a galaxy?
That, Tegan, is the Large Magellanic Cloud.
Who on Gallius are you two?
We were just...
Didn't you hear the siren? We're in lockdown.
I am Rovers, Imperator of the Celtic, known to some as the Starman.
We're getting an image on the main screen.
The Kepler?
Good gods.
What's happened to them?
Your ship has come under attack.
Now that's what I call a spaceship.
We're going in. Now we find out if anyone's waiting for us.
Look at the other examination tables. All the bodies are moving.
Your dead crew are walking.
The first one's coming this way.
Oh.
Tegan!
Bodies on the floor, covered in that red coral. What's happening?
The portal, as our friend here called it, seems to be powering up.
We should get away. Get out! Get out of my mind!
I will destroy your mind, boy. You will belong to the Star Men.
Don't shoot! You might hit
Tegan! Open fire!
If they don't slow down, they'll crash!
Confirm the Kepler's destination.
This base.
Big Finish. We love stories.